Good morning from 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. And welcome to our election special candidates forum. As each Saturday this month, we speak to one candidate vying for the Democratic nomination for congressperson from Virginia's 5th District. The program is underwritten by the Daily Progress with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main. Now here are your hosts, Bob McAdams and Jeff Leonard.
Good morning, Charlottesville. I am Jeff Leonard, General Manager of WPVC.
And I'm Bob McAdams, Special Events Coordinator at WPVC.
And today we're hosting a WPVC election special, one of four interviews, each with a Democratic candidate for Congress from the 5th District. WPVC does not endorse any candidate for a public office. We provide this information to help our listeners choose the best candidate. And you, our listeners, are helping us by submitting questions.
Today, congressional candidate Ben Cullip joins us in the WPVC studio. Ben, welcome to WPVC.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Ben, we'll start by getting to know a little bit about you. Where were you born, and what was your life like as you grew up?
So I was born at a hospital in Charlottesville, Virginia, Martha Jefferson Hospital, the old one. I was brought into this world by a pediatrician named Vito Periello, who I know many of your readers or many of your listeners are familiar with. Both my parents were teachers in Albemarle County at Albemarle High School when I was born. I was a public school kid raised in Virginia, and am now raising my family in Earliesville.
So you've got a long history here. How has your education and your working career prepared you to serve as a member of Congress?
Great question. So, I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Virginia here in government and history. And my first job out of undergraduate school was working in the Office of Admission at UVA. So I spent a lot of time traveling around the Commonwealth recruiting students to come to the university for their education. I can honestly tell you, I've been to every high school and community college in the 5th District of Virginia. It's, a really interesting experience going into communities and going to high schools. You get the opportunity to talk to families and you hear a lot about what's on their minds, what they're working on, what some of their worries are. I got my MBA at the Darden School here in Charlottesville and then have been working in the private sector ever since. Been working in finance at an investment firm here in Charlottesville as a financial advisor, investing, looking at companies in the 5th District of Virginia, creating jobs, investing in real estate. I'm proud that my education mostly did come from here in the 5th District.
So what have you been doing in the 5th District in recent years that sets your candidacy apart?
Obviously living, working, raising my family here, my wife, I've got a wife, Ashley, we've got two children. Elizabeth is almost 4 years old and, Thomas is, just turned 7 months old. We adopted Thomas from Fort Worth, Texas, last summer. And, we could talk a little bit more about that later, I presume, but, Ashley and I like to joke that we're slowly taking Texas Republicans and turning them into Virginia Democrats. I'm proud of the fact I've been heavily involved in the community here in Charlottesville. It's not just a place that Ashley and I have lived and worked. It's places that we've actively engaged in the community. So I'm on the board of the UVA, the advisory board of the UVA Children's Hospital. I'm on the board of the Albemarle County Police Foundation, which is the group that promotes communication between the police and the community. I'm also previously on the board of the Charlottesville Retirement Commission, which administers and the Charlottesville pension. Living, working, raising my family, and investing in the community.
Did I see Thomas was born prematurely?
Elizabeth was born severely premature. Yeah, Elizabeth was born about 3 months early.
Wow.
So,
what was that experience like for you guys?
Terrifying, just like any parent, right? The night that she was born, doctors told Ashley and I that she may not survive her first 72 hours of life. We did what any parents would do, right? We hugged each other, we cried, we prayed. But thanks to the good doctors and nurses at UVA's hospital, she's almost 4 years old now. I know we can talk a lot, we'll probably talk a lot about healthcare later on, but that's one of the experiences that informs my views on healthcare. And we're thankful that she's happy and healthy now.
For sure. Hey, running for Congress is a big deal. It's a lot of sacrifice to you personally, professionally, family. Now, why did you decide to run?
That's the ultimate question for us, right? And I think for me, you can boil it down to three things. The first is that this is home for me. You know, I was born here. I was raised in Virginia. I'm raising my family here. And the people that I see as we travel around the district, they're my friends. They're my relatives. They're my neighbors. And so when I see them struggling to find a good job or get access to high quality and affordable health care or find a good education for their kids, you know, that's personal for me. The second thing is I believe, I'm confident that we can do so much better than we are right now. You know, we can do better than Tom Garrett. We can do better than Donald Trump. And we can certainly do better than the failed policies coming out of Washington. And the third thing for me, one of the driving factors of my candidacy is the influence of big corporate money in politics. You know, our democratic system right now is bought and paid for by large corporations and their PACs. And we wonder why we can't solve a lot of the big problems that face our country, like prescription drug prices or gun control. And it's because politicians are bought and paid for by big corporations. And so that's why in this campaign, I pledged that I wouldn't take a dime from corporate PACs, because I think this is an opportunity for leadership. And we need some people to get elected without those big influences.
Now, for all the candidates, we've noticed that a top issue is healthcare, just as you were describing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to get this straight, do you believe that healthcare is a right? And if so, how do you propose to make healthcare a reality
mm-hmm.
for all the people?
So I do believe healthcare is a right. And, you know, we talked a little bit about my story and Elizabeth's story on healthcare to give you guys a little bit more of a sense of that. You know, she spent 2 months in UVA's NICU and just got outstanding care. I mean, we are all so fortunate to live in a community with such a great hospital. It's such a great children's hospital, but also just such a great hospital in general. I've often said that when I retire, I want to go back to school and become a NICU nurse, just because of the way that the impact that they had on our family. Now, she was in the hospital for 2 months, and we got a statement of charges for her stay. It was north of $500,000, you know, and that's absolutely devastating for a family. Just absolutely devastating.
There's nothing most of us can't come up with.
You know, we were fortunate because we had insurance. You know, we were fortunate that we had insurance. And the reality, though, is that it shouldn't take good fortune to be healthy in America. So that's why I support Tim Kaine's Medicare X proposal. Puts a public option into the already existing healthcare exchanges. If you wish to continue to provide or continue to get your health care through your employer, you're welcome to do so. But if you're not able to get your health insurance through an employer, or you're an entrepreneur, you can buy into Medicare. And I think that it's a great solution, something that we can do quickly, especially in some of our rural communities where some counties only have one health insurance option. Albemarle County and a lot of other places in the 5th District fall under this category. This is an opportunity to put an option into the marketplace for folks who don't currently have one.
Now, that'll approach it from a short-term perspective. Where do you think that the health care system and health insurance is going, and where would you look at that in terms of the long-term?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think the nice thing about the public option, this Medicare option, is that it does solve the problem very quickly, right? And we've got something immediate in front of us that we need to solve. Now, where it goes long-term, I think, is an open question. I think what we will see, I think, as people sign up for Medicare, is that you'll see a lot of people like it, right? I think, you know, generally, if you survey people on Medicare, there's high levels of satisfaction with the care that they're receiving. And so ultimately, that could lead to more and more people in this open marketplace choosing Medicare. And increasingly, those numbers are going up over time. And, you know, ultimately, some people ask the question, does that lead to a single-payer system? It may. But if it does, then that's because that's the marketplace choosing it, and that's consumers choosing that. And I think that's a possibility.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum, and in studio's Ben Cullop.
So I have a follow-up. How do you convince voters who have traditionally voted in a more conservative way relating to health insurance or health care against their own best economic self-interest? How do you convince them that it's okay to vote for something they actually need? Because for decades, they've been voting against what they need, which is both frustrating and confusing to me.
Yeah, you know, Jeff, I don't ever try to guess at, you know, the idea of people's own self-interests, right? You know, that to me is their decision to make in terms of how they vote. And so I don't want to, you know, I don't presume to be able to tell people what's good for them or in their own interest. But I do think Americans value choice, right? And this is one thing that you just see throughout our culture. Look at how many boxes of cereal you can buy when you go into a grocery store. Look at how many types of cars you can buy when you need to buy a new car, right? Americans value choice, and that's something that's sort of ingrained in our culture, and we need to make sure that we continue to provide that for them.
Having real choices brings us to another issue that's high on the list of all the candidates, and that's the economy. Now, it looks okay, maybe on paper, but the unemployment is low and the stock market is high for now, but a lot of people are struggling and they fear for the future. What do you see as wrong with the economy, and what should Congress do about it?
That's a great question. I mean, and it's an interesting one to look at, because a lot of the things that the news writes about, especially in terms of unemployment and the economy, are either nationally based or they're based on the entire Commonwealth. The unemployment rate's a good example of that. You know, people write all these stories, the unemployment rate's so low. Well, the reality is that in the 5th District of Virginia, that's not necessarily the case everywhere. You know, you look at the national unemployment averages are in the fours, right? Some places they're in the threes. In the 5th District of Virginia, we've got unemployment rates that are in the high single digits and low double digits. And if you dig even further into that, into underemployment, we've got some communities that are really hurting here. There's no getting around it. Certainly, the stock market's been doing very, very well. But the reality is that only about half of Americans even own a single stock, right? And so when you see the stock market going up, that's not something that roughly half of Americans feel. And I think that's something to keep in mind when we turn on the evening news and it's, oh, the Dow Jones is up 400 points or down 400 points. That's not actually a good indicator of the economy for most Americans. Now, for me, how do I think about this? You know, we can go back to the tax bill that was passed at the end of 2017. You know, this was a big, big tax cut for only a small group of people. You know, it was a tax break for, you know, the very wealthiest Americans and the largest corporations. The middle class really didn't get all that much. You know, the best analogy that I can come up with is that big corporations got a feast and the American middle class got crumbs. And it's largely because the tax bill subscribes to the idea of trickle-down economics, which I think history has proven to not really work all that well. So, you know, the way that I approach this is, how do you put more money into the pockets of the middle class, right? If I was going to redo this whole tax package, it's how do you put more money into the middle class? Because we know that's where economic demand comes from, right? We can use an example like Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola doesn't create more jobs or create more Coca-Cola when they have higher profit margins. Coca-Cola creates more Coke when the middle class has more money in their pockets and wants a Coke, right? So if we put money into the pockets of the middle class, into the wallets of the middle class, they will create demand for products, and that will stimulate the economy. So ultimately, my frustration and my argument against the tax bill is that it doesn't do what it's intended to do. Now, we just this week, we rolled out my tax principles, because I feel like it's not enough just to say, what am I against, right? I need to be able to say, what am I for? So I put out four principles that would guide me when it comes to voting on taxes in Congress. And just really briefly, you know, the first one is, I want to put the middle class first. over large corporations and the wealthiest Americans. I want to end the tax on taxes, which is just the cost of actually doing your taxes. You know, the reality is the IRS has most of the information it needs to file your taxes for you. But H&R Block and TurboTax are such big lobbyists in Washington, going back to the corporate money thing, that they haven't we haven't ever been able to get a bill like that passed. The third thing is I want to focus on small and medium-sized businesses versus large corporations. You know, this district particularly has a history of concentration and consolidation. It's not always been good for the communities in the district. And then the last thing is a new idea that we came up with called the Living Wage Tax Credit, which gives companies a one-time tax credit for increasing wages for hourly wages for employees. So, again, I don't think it's enough to be just against things. I want to actually be for things. And so that's why we're trying to put out my principles on how I would think about voting on this kind of stuff.
Would you be in favor of raising the minimum wage?
Yeah, I think Americans need a raise. Yeah, and so now the reality is that minimum wages in different parts of the district are very different, right? A $12 minimum wage in Danville is different than a $12 minimum wage in Warrenton or Charlottesville. And so I want to provide incentives for employers to raise that wage, but I also think the minimum wage needs to go up.
You're listening to the first 94.7 election special this morning. We're speaking with Ben Collip, candidate for the Democratic nomination for Congress from the 5th District. And I wanted to say that it's in a lot of ways
the economy and what people can do in the economy depends on education.
Yeah.
And for some people, our education system, you know, it's great. They really succeed. Mm-hmm. But for others, it's failing them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are you hearing from students and teachers about the problems they face? And how can Congress help them?
Yeah, you know, my background on this informs my thinking. And the first is that I told you earlier, I am the child of two public school teachers, and I am a public school kid. I've also worked in education. And so when I was traveling around, when I was working for the admission office as an admission dean and traveling around the district and in the Commonwealth, I got to see really the disparity between the cash-strapped schools in Southside and the very best magnet schools in Northern Virginia. And we have created a system where the zip code into which a child is born dictates their educational outcomes in life. And that's unfair. And largely we've created that because we have, and this goes back to your question about what can Congress do, we've underinvested and underfunded our education system. And I believe that teachers and students are doing what we have asked of them.
Now, most educational systems are funded by the property tax, and it's local, and they get some support from the state.
Yeah.
Not much from the Congress right now.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we need to change. I think that there is a place for the federal government to be more involved in education, especially from a funding perspective. That's a place that I think we can make some changes, and that we could be seeing more success. You know, a couple of things, especially in this district. I mean, your point about property taxes is a great one because we're seeing population leave some of our counties in Southside, and that's creating a real stress on some of the school systems there. But one of the biggest things that I think we ought to do is be reinvesting in vocational training. You know, one of the things that we used to do is in high school, we used to fund programs that would allow you to graduate from high school and get a job. These are things like auto tech, plumbing classes, electrician classes. We've cut funding for a lot of those programs, and it means that you've got to go on to get an associate's degree or an additional certification just to be able to get one of those jobs. Now, we might say, oh, well, that doesn't sound so bad, except for a lot of the folks who are seeking those types of jobs, they need to start working as fast as possible. A lot of them have families that depend on them for income. And so to say, well, let's just wait another 2 years so you can get a vocational degree or an associate's degree, it's not going to work for some of these families. So I want to make sure that we're reinvesting in these types of programs in our high schools. I think that's one big thing that we can do. Also, I think we need to focus on pre-K for universal pre-K. We know that a lot of educational outcomes in life are decided between the ages of 3 and 6. Academic research done at the Curry School here has shown us that. So invest in pre-K, make sure higher education is affordable, modernize our K through 12 system. We've got a lot of work to do on education.
I know a lot of people coming out of an education experience are saddled with debt.
Mm-hmm.
What can be done to help them?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. We spent a lot of time trying to think creatively about this because we've got a real problem on our hands. You know, so one, I think student debt should be able to be dischargeable in bankruptcy. You know, that's one of the only forms of debt that you can't discharge that way. The second thing, I think, you know, we can look for creative solutions. And there's been a lot of talk about creating a 401k type entity where employers and employees can work together to put money into a tax-free or a tax-advantaged vehicle that can be used to pay off student loans. So employers would get a tax credit for putting money into something like this. Employees would get a tax credit for putting money into something like this, but it has to be used for paying off student loans. So there's a lot of creative thinking that's being done in this space right now.
All right. Well, thank you, Ben. I'm Ben Cullip, candidate for the 5th Congressional District for the Democratic nomination. It was a great discussion. I'm Jeff Leonard. I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams, my friend and volunteer here at 94.7. And welcome back. I'm Jeff Leonard, here with my friend Bob McAdams. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and our election special, the 5th District Congressional District candidates, the Democratic nominations. And this is Ben Cullip. Ben is here. Bob, take it away.
Well, we've been talking about the issues, and the issues aren't going to get any easier. The real consequences of climate change present a growing danger for us now, but especially for our kids and grandkids. In the face of the Trump administration's actions, what should government and individuals do to combat climate change? How can we make protecting our environment also build our economy?
Yeah, Republicans would have you believe that you can only do one of those things. They would have you believe that you have to make a choice. Do we grow our economy or do we protect our environment? And to me, that's a false choice. And one that Democrats need to push back on, because there are a ton of examples of ways that we can do both of those together. And in the 5th District of Virginia right now, you see that in the renewable energy sector, right? You see companies like Apex Wind Energy in Charlottesville and Sun Tribe Solar, who are making incredible progress on wind technology, solar technology, and they're reducing our reliance on fossil fuels while at the same time creating jobs. And so there are really, really lots of opportunities for us to do both of those things. And I love the fact that we're innovating and leading on this in the 5th District of Virginia. Now, to me, this is an issue of leveling the playing field. You know, the federal government, the state government has really given a lot of advantages to fossil fuel companies over the years in terms of tax breaks and tax credits, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of that goes back to the corporate money and politics thing that we were discussing earlier, which is these big corporations have given a ton of money to politicians. And so politicians have voted for all these favorable tax treatments for fossil fuel companies. I'm asking, and I would vote for, ensuring that that same treatment is extended to solar companies and to wind companies, to renewable energy companies. So, you know, to be specific, some of the big issues that face the 5th District right now from an environmental perspective, obviously we've got the big issues of the two pipelines that are running through the 5th District. And I'm very firmly against both of those pipelines and have been since the beginning of not only my campaign, but even before then, just working on this issue before I even got into this race. Also, you know, in Southside Virginia, people, the issue of uranium mining is popping up again. I know that a lot of you guys probably remember this conversation from a couple years ago. That this is something that's gaining traction again, and it's something that we may end up really needing to dig in our heels on and fight against in the coming years.
A lot of what's inhibiting the development of like solar power here in Virginia is the limitations that are being imposed on developing solar power and deploying it residentially.
Yeah.
You know, speak to that in terms of what can be done to get past those limitations?
Yeah, I think that the I am against those types of limitations. I think if you're a farmer and you want to put up solar panels on your farm, if you're a homeowner and you want to put up solar panels on your roof, you absolutely should be able to do that. And I think there's a place for federal tax credits to help you be able to do that. I think if you want to be, you know, we're working on smart meters, and if you want to be able to sell energy back to the grid, you should be able to do that. And these are all things that I would support strongly in Congress.
You're listening to the first of 94/7 election specials. This morning, we're speaking with Ben Collup. He's a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Congress from the 5th District. Now, Ben, there are lots of other hot issues in our area. The Black Lives Matter movement and the events in Charlottesville in July, and particularly on August 11th and 12th last summer, they confronted us all with the racism that exists in our society.
Mm-hmm.
What should be the response, personally and legislatively, in order to finally overcome this racism?
It's a great question, Bob. And I think one of the things that we all know, because we've lived in this community for a long time, is that this is not a new issue for Charlottesville. You know, there was a lot of talk after August 11th and 12th about how these folks needed to just go home, right? And there's certainly an element of that. But the reality is, if you've lived in this community for a long time, you know that Charlottesville is not perfect on this issue. Charlottesville is the place that shut its schools down rather than integrate. Charlottesville is a place that raised an African-American, you know, bulldozed an African-American community to make way for a white shopping district, right? So our history on this is troubled in our community, and something we want to make progress on. August 11th and 12th, you know, we had just brought Thomas home.
Thomas, our son,
yeah, from Texas. We, you know, told you we'd adopted him from Texas. We had just brought him home, and literally first week, and all the parents who are listening, you know that feeling of first week with a newborn, right? You're in this fog, and all of a sudden you're seeing, you know, Nazis and white supremacists march on our home and our hometown. And this issue is particularly. We were really thinking hard about this. And one thing that I haven't shared a lot, but is worth sharing with right now, is that Thomas is biracial. So Thomas's mom is white and Thomas's dad is black. And so I was watching these people march in our hometown and say that my son was not equal to me just because of the color of his skin. And I certainly understand the idea that I'm going to have to teach Thomas differently than my father had to teach me. You know, I'm going to have to teach him how to talk to police officers if he gets pulled over by a cop for going too fast. I'm going to have to teach him how to walk through a convenience store without being accused of stealing something. And these, like I said, conversations my father never had to have with me that I'm going to have with him. And let's also be clear about something, and that's that Tom Garrett, he is quite really, frankly, disgusting on this topic. You know, Tom Garrett hosted the organizers of the August 11th and 12th rally in his congressional office. This is his congressional office that we all pay for. And he's hosting the organizers of that rally and taking pictures with them in his office. And that should just make all of our blood boil. And I guess lastly on this issue, in terms of who do I look to as sort of a example on some of these issues, one is Bobby Kennedy. And, you know, Bobby Kennedy would go into, you know, communities across America, and what he saw, what he learned, you know, he made his life work. Life's work to fight injustice wherever he saw it. And that's a model that I intend to follow, and that I am following.
That's something that ties us all together. August 12th, plus also this year will be the 50th anniversary of the assassination by gun, mm-hmm, of Martin Luther King Jr. and then of, mm-hmm, Bobby Kennedy, mm-hmm, mentioned. And gun violence takes a terrible toll in our country. And the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, it enraged the students who are clearly eloquently, forcefully demanding that legislators pass common sense gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
What gun laws will you support in Congress, and will you refuse to accept campaign donations or support from the NRA?
Well, certainly, I would absolutely refuse all support from gun manufacturers, the NRA. This goes back to my no corporate money pledge. One of the reasons why we have had trouble solving this gun control issue is because a lot of, let's be honest with ourselves, a lot of legislators are bought and paid for by the NRA and big gun manufacturers. So until we solve the problem of corporate money in politics, we do have challenges solving a lot of these other problems. So in terms of specifics in the form of gun control, I'm for limiting magazine sizes. I am for universal background checks. I'm for closing the gun show loophole. I am for banning bump stocks. I'm for making sure that we keep guns out of the hands of anybody with domestic abuse history. You know, certainly, if you can't fly on an airplane, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. All of these types of gun common sense gun reform. I'm for an automatic assault weapons ban. And I think that if I can say these things, I'm a hunter, I'm a gun owner, I'm a former NRA member. I didn't leave the NRA. The NRA left me, right? The NRA used to be an organization that promoted gun safety and promoted, parents hunting with their sons and daughters. And it's no longer that. If I can say those things, every member of Congress should be able to.
I'm Bob McAdams, and we're talking with Ben Cullop, who's running for the Democratic nomination for 5th District Congressman. There are other issues that are affecting young people, and one of them is immigration, particularly the people brought to America as children. They had protection from deportation under President Obama, but President Trump has taken away that protection, and the courts are contesting that. There's cases going there. But what will you do in Congress, if elected, to keep the Dreamers here? And where do you stand on immigration law in general?
Mm-hmm. So this issue, especially on the Dreamers, is pretty simple to me. And that's that these kids are Americans in every way other than their paperwork. And we need a congressperson in the 5th District of Virginia who's going to fight for their right to stay here in the country. In some ways, we can overcomplicate this, but I think ultimately there's a very simple answer to the question. Now, immigration as a whole, this is one of those things that shows how broken Washington is, because everyone in Washington knows that it's a problem that needs to be solved, and everybody generally knows what the solution is, but because of just pure politics, we're not able to solve it. And this is ultimately where Washington being broken is so bad for our country. And it's that this is an urgent problem. This is a problem right in front of us now that we just can't seem to solve. And I think the reality is that the ultimate solution is something that probably doesn't make either side perfectly happy. But we just need new leaders in Washington who are willing to get their hands dirty and get the job done on this topic.
So coming up next, right after this interview airs, is El Club de los Sabores. We go to Spanish language. But this is your opportunity to talk directly to the Spanish language community. A lot of the people that come in here, fall under that caveat. What would you like to say? I mean, what can you say to them that is going to make them optimistic?
I would say that come next January, when I'm sworn in Congress, they're going to have an advocate that I will work my tail off to make sure that we solve this problem quickly for them in a way that makes sure that they can stay here, that their families don't get divided, that their rights are protected. Your heart breaks when you hear some of the stories in our own community about families and the worries that they have about being separated. We've got wonderful people doing work in this community, sitting down with elementary school age children saying, here's what happens if your parents don't come home from work. And that absolutely breaks my heart. And right now, Tom Garrett is not an advocate for these children and these families, and I will be an advocate for these children and these families.
Well, thank you. The Me Too movement is unmasking the abuse of power to extort sexual favors by men who control the future of women. At the same time, the women's right to make their own reproductive choices is being challenged, and women are still often paid less than men for the same job. What should Congress do to protect the rights, or all of these rights, of these women?
This is a pretty straightforward question to me. You know, I think we should have an absolute zero tolerance policy for any type of sexual harassment behavior, whether or not that's in the business community or in the halls of Congress. And, you know, you can be sure that in my workplace in our congressional office is going to be a place for everyone, regardless of gender, race, identity, et cetera. So, you know, I think one thing we need to be sure to do to your question is that we need to make sure that women's healthcare decisions are made between a woman and her doctor. This is not a place for the government. We need to ensure that women are paid equally for equal work. These are no-brainer questions to me that we need to make sure that we've got a congressperson who's willing to do the hard work on these topics of fighting for these causes and working to advance them.
Is it time for the Equal Rights Amendment?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. I'm a supporter of the Equal Rights Amendment.
All right, the Trump administration has proposed an infrastructure bill with no funds. They're depending on private investment and private ownership. What is your plan to rebuild and strengthen our nation's infrastructure? And where do you stand on the privatization of public functions?
This is a great question, and it's particularly applicable to the 5th District of Virginia because we can solve two problems at once when it comes to infrastructure. One, we need to reinvest in our infrastructure here. We need to reinvest in our roads. We need to reinvest in our schools. We need to reinvest in our airports, our bridges. We also have a lot of people with the desire to work, and we have a lot of people with skills. You know, a lot of people in Southside have worked with their hands. They've worked in mills. They've worked in factories. They understand how to build things. And so we can put people back to work at the same time that we invest in our future. And so I think that an infrastructure bill that does start to rebuild some of these things and put a lot of Americans back to work is something that I would be really strongly in favor of in Congress. You know, I'm not in favor of going and privatizing our national assets, right? You know, there was this big conversation recently. Donald Trump wanted to privatize the airports in Northern Virginia, Dulles and National. I don't think that's the right direction to head. You know, the point, and this can get a little wonky, but the point of this type of infrastructure is that it's there to do something that a private industry wouldn't do, right? And it's there to facilitate the commerce and the education that's happening within our society.
And it's there for all of us.
It is.
Not just for those who can pay for it.
I think that's one of the best points, right, is that there's a social justice element to this, which is to say that we're putting infrastructure in place so that regardless of your income or regardless of your background, you have the ability to access things.
There are some overriding issues that we face, and the American president is got the role of commander-in-chief and head of state. Congress is supposed to declare war, although they haven't done it since 1941.
Mm-hmm.
With Donald Trump's erratic behavior and plans for greatly increased military spending, including new nuclear weapons, a lot of people fear that he will start a nuclear war. If elected, what would you do to prevent nuclear war?
Well, I guess none of us can really be sure with any certainty what Donald Trump will do. And that's an important place to start on this. You know, I think ultimately this comes down to the fact that we need a Democratic House of Representatives and a Democratic Senate to be a check on Donald Trump on this topic. And I look to Tim Kaine, who's helped educate me on this topic. You know, one of Tim Kaine's causes right now in the Senate is how do we properly declare war? And he's been on a charge to make sure that we've got AUMFs, authorization use of military force, for all the wars that we're currently engaged in and any future ones that we would engage in. So this is a place where Congress has ceded its responsibility for declaring war to the executive branch. And I think it's time for Congress to take that back and make sure that the people whose constituents are actually going to be fighting the war have a say in whether or not we go to war.
All right, well, thank you, Ben Culp, candidate for the Democratic nomination for the 5th District here in Virginia. Hate to interrupt the discussion, but we need to go to another short break. I'm Jeff Leonard, and I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams, 94.7 WPVC election special interview with congressional candidate Ben Culp. Bob and Ben Culp, we have one more segment. Let's get back to the issues.
Ben, because next year in Congress, if you're elected there, you'd be facing issues that are unpredictable, things that just aren't going to get talked about in the campaign. So we have some more or less general questions. To start, what do you see as the proper role of government?
I'm going to do an unpolitician thing and answer this question shortly and succinctly. You know, I believe that the central role of government is to be a force for good and ensure that every American has an equal opportunity to succeed. And that's my my 30,000-foot statement about what the government's relationship with its constituents ought to be.
So you see government as solving problems for most of the people, particularly in areas where people cannot do that themselves.
I think that's part of it. Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think, obviously we had a conversation about infrastructure, and it's putting in place the systems to allow people to be successful. It goes back to an education system that's fully funded. It goes back to roads and bridges, airports to facilitate commerce and things like that.
Yeah, I think that the opponent that you'll be facing is going to take a more conservative tact on this.
I think
this.
That's likely. Yeah.
heading in the direction of the only purpose for government is to protect private property and defend the nation.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if we were to go that way?
Well, that's a good question. I think one thing that we know about Tom Garrett is, well, we know a couple of things about Tom Garrett. The first is that he uses three words when one will do. And he has this way of sort of talking in circles and making himself try to sound smart without saying much at all, right? You ask him a question, hey, how do you think we should create jobs? And all of a sudden he's quoting Patrick Henry and James Madison, and he's talked for 6 minutes and he hasn't answered your question. I think we need somebody who's going to be able to call him out on that. I think we need somebody who's going to be able to poke the bear, right? He strikes me as a guy who's got pretty thin skin. You can kind of get under his skin a little bit and make him say some stuff that he probably regrets. He's the ultimate free marketer, too. You know, Tom Garrett's the type of guy who is okay if a bottle of water costs $30 in Virginia Beach after a hurricane. Because you say, well, that's what the market would bear. I think we've got a lot of material to work with on the guy.
Another function of Congress is to prepare a budget. And they should do that every year, although they've been a little bit lax on that. And the process is often a mess. What would be your budget priorities, and what changes? Well, you've already talked about the tax laws,
mm-hmm.
because the taxes have to pay for the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the Republicans are planning to greatly increase the national debt, the annual deficit.
Mm-hmm.
But what are your budget priorities?
It's a great point, Bob, because Tom Garrett's going to run on that tax bill from last year, that the Trump-Garrett tax bill, because that's the only accomplishment that he has. Now, it's not much of an accomplishment, but it's the only thing that the Republican Congress accomplished last year. And so you know he's going to run on this topic. I've already told you that I view that as a feast for corporations and crumbs for the middle class. And so we're going to push back really hard on him to make sure that he can't get away with it. And one of the big challenges is that we know, because they added $1.5 trillion to the deficit, that cuts are coming, right? And what are those cuts going to be in, right? They're projected to be in things like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. And we need to elect a Democratic Congress to push back against those cuts and to repeal the parts of the tax bill that are so disastrous. So my pledge to you and to your listeners is that, you know, I will be a person in Congress. I will be a representative in Congress who will fight to preserve Social Security, preserve Medicare, preserve Medicaid. That's a commitment that I make. Now, specifically on my tax principles that we just rolled out, there are four big ones, but one of the ones I want to talk about just briefly is a living wage tax credit, which we're proud of. It's a new innovative idea that we've put forth, which is to say that any company that raises employees' wages, let's say somebody makes $8 an hour and you raise their wages to $12 an hour, a company and business would be able to take a tax credit for 75% of that increase in the first year that they make those increases. And so we think this is a great way to accomplish two things. One is to incent businesses to do this, and the other is to make sure that Americans get a raise, which they so desperately need right now. So, you know, I think from a tax perspective, there's a big difference between me and Tom Garrett, and there's certainly a big difference between me and Donald Trump, and we're going to be making sure to highlight those things over the course of this campaign.
Listen to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Forum with Ben Cullip. Republicans have been using every trick possible to keep Democrats from getting elected. Gerrymandering, restrictive voter IDs, laws, purging voter registration rolls just before the election, reducing days that people can vote. You know, what should Congress do to take action to protect each person's right to vote?
This is a great question and ultimately comes to the heart of our democracy. And I think we've got some legislative things that we can do here. You know, we need to fight all these voter suppression laws. And let's be honest, that's what they are, right? This is Republicans trying to keep groups of people, whether or not they're low income, whether or not they're minorities, people of color, from voting and participating in our democratic system. And it's disgusting. So we need to make sure that we're fighting all of these voter suppression laws. We also need to fight for a new Voting Rights Act. This is something that dramatically is in need of updating. But then there's also tactical things to do, like we need to support our post office, right? We need to make sure that our post office is fully funded because this is a way that people vote absentee. We also, you know, should look at voting by mail. I don't, you know, I think there are some details to work out there, but it's something that's worth considering. So this is a place where we just need to remember that elections have consequences, and we need to elect somebody who's going to fight for these kinds of things.
Now, voters feel frustrated. You know, they try to reach out to their current member of Congress with letters or telephone calls, and there's very little response. While lobbyists write health insurance repeal bills and tax bills and every other bill that they can afford to write, you know, how could the legislature change the process to restore some integrity where people actually have access to their representatives?
Yeah, this goes back to money in politics for me. We wonder why we can't solve some of the problems that we have in our country, right? Why can't we lower the cost of prescription drugs? Well, we can if we get big money out of the halls of Congress. Why can't we have a tax code that favors small and medium-sized businesses? Well, we can if we get the largest corporations and their money out of the halls of Congress. Why can't we protect against the fraud and abuse in the for-profit education system? Well, we can if we get this big corporate money out of politics. And so, to me, this is a foundational issue about our democracy, which is whose voice is being heard. And you know, Tom Garrett's taken almost $400,000 from big corporate special interests. When he's voting in Washington, who do you think he's thinking about? Do you think he's thinking about, Bob, do you think he's thinking about you and me? No, he's not. He's thinking about his big corporate donors. And ultimately, when I am voting in Congress, the only people that I'm going to be thinking about are my constituents.
You'll be thinking about your constituents. Let's talk about getting elected. The 5th District, it's huge. It goes from close to the Maryland border up north and all the way to the North Carolina border in the south. It covers a lot of media markets. A winning campaign will be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
How will you fund your campaign? And you've already said that you're going to reject contributions from corporations, Dominion Energy, and other corporate PACs.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to pay for all that?
We're going to raise the money from individuals. And we think that we are going to have the ability to do that. But let's talk about the first part of the question, which is how do you actually go about getting elected? And this comes back to the fact that this is home for me and that I was born here, raised in Virginia, raising my family here. And I think ultimately that I can get more bang for my buck in this race than others might be able to, because the people that I see as we travel around this district, they're my friends, they're my relatives, they're my neighbors, and they're going to give me the benefit of the doubt. You know, it's going to be when I come to them with an idea, when I come to them with a policy proposal or a vote, you know, they're going to say, you know what, we may not agree on everything, but I know that Ben has our best interests at heart and that Ben understands this community. And so I think that because I've got that built-up level of trust within the district, that we get we can stretch our dollars a little bit further than perhaps some other people can. And so, you know, we're going to do that. We also know that to get elected in this district, you have to build a massive organization. It takes building the army of volunteers to make phone calls and to knock doors. That ultimately, I am the vessel, but my job is just to take the people's voices in the 5th district with me to Washington. And this is going to be a real team effort, getting a Democrat elected in the 5th district this year.
Now, the first step to getting elected is to win the nomination. And the 5th District Democratic Committee has chosen a caucus plus convention nominating process. What do you need to do to win the nomination?
I think we'll win the nomination by telling my story. You know, I want to tell the story of being born here, raised my family here. I want to tell the story of working in this community, investing in this community. I think ultimately if we tell that positive story, if we take a positive vision to every corner of the district, that we're going to be able to win people's hearts and minds. Now, we do need people to show up at these caucuses, and I'm sure as you guys are going to be doing some voter education, this is different than a primary, right? This is a little bit more complicated. You've got to show up at a caucus and be counted and elect delegates to this convention. So one of the things that we've wanted to do as a campaign is do a lot of voter education. We want to be able to say to people, if you have questions about this process, let us help you. And so we've set up a caucus hotline for the Cullip campaign. I'll give you that number right now. And this is a number where you can call with any question about the caucuses. You can call and say, what day is my caucus? Where is it? And we will give you that information. And that number is 1-888-520-5545. 1-888-520-5545. And that is that's not going to be me talking about one of my policy issues and why you should vote for me. This is just pure education on the caucuses.
People have to kind of imagine the Iowa caucuses for the 5th district.
That's right. That's right. It's going to be fun. Caucusing is fun. It's going to be a little bit of a party. There's going to be an exciting atmosphere. This is not something to be afraid of. This is not intimidating. You show up and you say, look, I bought into this Cullip guy's ideas, and I think he represents our values well. I want to go stand in his corner at these caucuses. And I am asking for all your listeners' support.
Now, at the caucuses, the members who are of the caucus, the people who come there, who show up and are supporting you, they'll be electing delegates to go to a convention. And the 5th Congressional District will be holding that convention down in Farmville on May the 5th. What if someone wants to get really involved in your campaign, how do they become a delegate?
That's a great question, and thanks for bringing it up, Bob. You can go to our website, www.bencullup.com, BENCULLOP.com. And we've got all the information about how to caucus, how to become a delegate. The convention is on May 5th in Farmville. And like I said, that's also going to be fun. It shouldn't be intimidating to anyone. This is going to be fun. It's easy to participate. You're participating in your democratic process.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Ben, what is it? BenCullip.com?
That's right.
BenCullip.com. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us. And our WPVC listeners also. For the next in our series of the election special interviews, who is it, Bob?
Next week, we'll have Andrew Sneathern here.
And don't forget that if you want to hear this broadcast again, it's available at cvillepodcast.net, which I believe you can reach from our 947wpvc.org website. For Jeff Leonard, I'm Bob McAdams. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the 94.7 WPVC Election Special Candidates Forum. The program is underwritten by The Daily Progress with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main. Join us again next Saturday at 11 as we talk to yet another candidate for the Democratic nomination for 5th District U.S. Congressperson. You can also suggest questions for the candidates at 947WPVC.org or through the WPVC Facebook page.